Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. You'll find us here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, WAFS Biz 1190. And again, we're glad you're here. Here on Driven to Business, we like to talk about a variety of topics, and I particularly enjoy talking to folks that have started unique businesses. By the way, we are streaming live right now on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes, so check us out. Our guest today is Kim Anderson. Kim runs a blog and has a little business. She's known as a thrifty little mom. I love that name, Kim. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Kim, tell us how you came to start the Thrifty Little Mom blog.
Well, a few years ago, I had my first child, and I was doing the new mom thing, and then I read John Acuff's book, Start, and in the midst of that, I was really struggling with, like, who I was. You know, I'm a new mom. I identified with that, but I have this really strong entrepreneurial side to me, and I said to myself, you know, in 20 years when my kids are grown out of the house, like, who will I be then? And for some reason, like in that book, I'm pretty sure he mentioned like mom blogger or something. And so I got curious about it and I looked it up and I found some books on Amazon about blogging. And so I bought the books and started reading those. And I thought, you know, I think I can do this. And, you know, these were books where people were just normal people who had decided, you know, I'm going to start this website. I'm a writer. I can do content and things like that. And these books gave me quite a bit of guidance. And so I just started. And it was interesting. Like, the more I wrote, the more I started kind of figuring out, like, oh, I write a lot about frugal living. I, you know, thrifty lifestyle. And that's kind of just how things came what they were. And the more I wrote, the more I realized I had this, you know, kind of thrifty niche, and I said, you know, this is maybe what I need to just go with, and that's kind of where the name came from and everything else. So.
Well, I love the thrifty little mom. It's a very catchy a title, and it sort of gives you a vivid picture of doing. You make the point in your blogs that being thrifty is not being cheap. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, I think growing up, like, my parents were very frugal and they were very thrifty, and sometimes I thought they were cheap because, you know, we didn't just go out and just buy whatever we wanted all the time. Like, right. We were very planned about what we did. And now that I'm an adult, I can see that, you know, thrifty living means that you carefully plan where you're going to spend your money and you don't spend more than you have to. It's very intentional. It's very active. And that might mean, it might mean spending money on something that's expensive, but when you do, you're intentional and you're calculated about right. it, and you compare prices and you do your homework. And it's not like you just have to have the cheapest version of every single thing that ever comes out. Like, there's just intent. You know, it's very intentional what you do.
You know, my wife is very thrifty, but we've been married a good while, and I had learned some time ago she does not like being called cheap. She would rather quickly correct me and say she's frugal, not cheap.
Yes.
And there's another thing that I was thinking about. You know, there's thrifty or frugal is not the same as stinginess either, is it?
No, it's not. Because I would say my father in particular is probably one of the most frugal people I know, but he gives the most of anybody I know.
Yeah, I've often said I think on any person, I think especially for a Christian, being that stinginess is just not becoming at all on anybody, and there's a huge difference in someone that watches where their money's going. And you know, basically what you're saying is that when you're frugal, you may spend money on something expensive, but as you said, you're mm-hmm. intentional about it, so you don't at the end of the month go, man, where did my money go? You know
right.
where it went.
Right.
And it went where you wanted it to go. Kim, so many people, and we all know people, that are absolutely eaten up with financial worries. I could tell you stories of businesses in the same situation. And those worries and concerns about finances absolutely began to dominate and define their lives. Now, you spend time in your blogs talking a bit about this. Tell us, just sort of give us your perspective on this.
You know, because of what I do and what I write about, I get in a lot of these conversations with people. And typically, those concerns come down to people who have made a financial decision based on money they were making, and then they hit a rough patch, right, and they couldn't afford the things that they previously could. And in some cases, they feel trapped because they're upside down on a car, a house, or a loan. And it's like those things are eating up every bit of extra money they get, and they can just never get ahead. And in those cases, it might be time to start selling stuff or getting rid of what you can't afford and downsizing, because you're never going to get out until you start doing stuff that changes the situation that you're in.
You know, the other thing that I have run into a lot of friends, and fortunately for my wife and I and our family, this is something that's never hit us, and I'm so thankful for that we've never fallen into this trap. But it's a trap of overusing credit cards. You know, you spend, you think credit cards are not real money, so you just spend them, and the next thing you know, you're in such dire straits. It amazes me occasionally. I've had employees and friends and even some family members that have just fallen into, and you just want to step back and say, how in the world did you get in that much credit card debt? But it was a little by little, they just fell into a hole.
It's true.
And then getting out of it, you know, the worst case scenario I ever ran across was we had an employee who made pretty good money, actually. He just did not manage his money, and he ran up a bunch of credit card bills, and then he told me to get out of it. He and his wife were just overwhelmed and burdened with it, and just, you know, could not get out. So he ended up taking a second mortgage on his home to pay off the credit cards. But of course, you can probably read the end of the story. What happened?
Right.
Is that he did not tear up the credit cards. And what happened was, when it was all said and done, they got rid of that debt. He ran a credit card debt right back up. And now you've got, you're double stuck here. You've got your house is on the line, and you've got the same credit card. It's just, I just do think people need to really do that. And it's just something I think as a mom, you're the thrifty mom, which has the word mom in it there. So tell us, do you think we, and meaning all of us in general as parents, do a very good job of teaching our kids sound financial principles?
I think that, you know, I think some parents struggle with the idea like that they're failing or something in how they're teaching their kids about money. But I think that a lot of parents aren't really failing. I think they're just focused on what society tells them is a normal way of life.
Right.
You know, when society says your kids need to have, you know, they need to go to the best schools, or they need to have the best clothes, you know, I had readers ask me, you know, I'm broke, but I need to get my kid a car. Well, do you really need to get your kid do you need to co-sign a loan for your kid to have a car? You know, just thinking through things like, you know, these societal norms that are set up that we all say, okay, well, this is what's normal, and this is what I need to do to be normal or to be, you know, a part of the way things are, you know. But, like, I bring up my parents a lot because they're the ones who taught me really about frugal living.
Right.
I grew up shopping at garage sales and thrift stores. You know, when I was a teenager, like middle school, thrift stores wasn't so cool. You know, I was a little embarrassed to be in a thrift store. But now that I'm an adult, like, I really appreciate that my parents taught me, like, that it's okay, you know, to buy used things. You know, it's okay to go on Craigslist. It's okay to, you know, my parents were the ones who, if they saw a piece of furniture on the side of the road that was in good condition, they'd pull over and, you know, we'd be throwing it in the back of the car because, you know, you can either fix that up and sell it. You can use it in your house. Like, you know, one person's trash is another person's treasure. But there are a lot of people who aren't, you know, a lot of parents who are like, you know, that's just outside of their realm of, like, that's not normal. You know, like, that's not something I'm going to do, which is fine. You know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know that it's that parents, you know, fail, but I think one of the best things they could do to teach their kids sound financial principles is to be just living examples of that to their kids. So, you know, like, when your kid wants something, instead of running out and co-signing a car loan, say, let's go out, find you a job. You know, you earn the money. And when you get to the point where you can pay for your gas, your car insurance, and buy a used car, then we can talk. You know what I mean? Like, but just these things where you show your kid, like, this is how life really is. This is how life works. And even with me, I have a 3-year-old, and right now we're trying to develop ways to teach him, okay, you know, by cleaning up your play area when you're done, like, we're going to put in our reward in for you. Like, just teaching him the value of hard work, and that starts, you know, even now for us. So, you know, I would say most parents really try hard, but sometimes we just fall into these expectations of the world around us, and it can be hard to break that mindset sometimes.
I think one of the things that, and it's not just kids, adults get into this too. It's where you want everything right now. I mean,
yes.
you just have somehow gotten out of the discipline of delaying gratification. Mm-hmm. So like to say, do you say, if you want a car, save money and get a car.
Uh-huh.
And if you want if you really want a really nice set of shoes that you and new and all that, well, save money for them and go get them when you have the money.
Right.
Go get them. And Kim, we've had my wife and I've had friends over the years that would do things, and these are adults that would do things like go out and buy a new couch, and I'm not making this up. This happens to friends of ours.
Right.
Go out and buy a new couch, and the next day their power get turned off.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just like you have just totally skewed your priorities here. I mean, you're living in a fantasy world or something.
Yeah.
It's almost a mental disease of some sort.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a big thing to do with priorities, like you just said. You know, it's the do you want your power to stay on, or do you want to keep using a cell phone? You know, like just
exactly. Those
things. You have to make priorities in life.
You know, here in town, one of the sort of a famous guy here in town, who's on television, radio, and nationally, is Clark Howard. I saw him being interviewed, I think, on CNBC. I might be wrong. It was some national program, television.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy asked him, Clark, sitting there, and he's pretty nicely dressed. The guy said, "Okay, you're supposed to be Mr. Frugal." He said, "How much did you pay for that jacket you got on? It was a nice sports jacket." And Clark said, "What do you think I paid for it?" The guy said, "Oh, cheap guy like you, you probably paid $50. He said, "I paid $5 for it at a garage sale."
Awesome.
Or a yard sale.
Yeah.
The guy said, "You paid $5 for it." He said, "Yes, why would you pay $100 when you could get it for five?" He said, it makes no sense at all. Kim, more to come. Stick around. We are talking to Kim Anderson, the thrifty mom. You can find her. Kim, give us your website right fast.
It's thriftylittlemom.com.
Thriftylittlemom.com. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking with Kim Anderson, the thrifty little mom. You find her at thriftylittlemom.com. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
All right, thriftylittlemom.com. Check her out there. Kim, let's instead of talking so many generalities, let's get into some of your thrifty little mom ideas here. Tell us about the cash envelope system that you encourage people to use.
Yeah, that system I think has been around for a really long time. And keeping cash on hand for expenses is a proven system for managing expenses and avoiding debt. And so what you typically do is, if you want to do a cash envelope system, you are pretty much doing away with credit cards and things like that. And in our case, when we use it, we continue to use like our debit card for, you know, utilities or bills that would be paid online. But for those expenses that you would typically go over on,
right,
like groceries, or, you know, if you have a clothing budget, if you have, what are the other budgets you typically, you know, just those general life budgets that we typically, you know, go over on, you have this cash system. And so when you get paid, you go and you get your money that you've decided that you're going to spend in that category, and you divide them amongst envelopes, and then you carry those envelopes around with you. And so let's say you go to the grocery store, and you spend your money, you know, and you buy your groceries, and you go here, and you go here, and you spend money out of your envelopes. Well, once the money in those envelopes is gone, you're done. Like, you don't have any more money to spend out of
right.
those categories. So it's a really simple way, you know, to start controlling what you're spending, because you can't just swipe your card. And that kind of goes back to what you were talking about earlier, when people get in, you know, kind of get in trouble with credit cards. But if you are struggling with credit cards because you're constantly swiping, it might be time to switch to like an envelope system where you can't just swipe.
And I think as much as anything, it just makes you aware of what you've
yes.
spent. I mean, that's
exactly.
You know, I was thinking of sort of a silly analogy here. I'm trying to lose a little bit of weight. And so one of the things I do is I have a little iPhone app here
mm-hmm.
that I can put into. So I just keep up with all the calories that I eat. That's all.
Right.
And So, you know, and sometimes you're surprised. Like, you know, yeah. you'll be thinking, oh, I would like to have a milkshake. You look on there and that's 700 calories. You go, I don't, maybe I don't. Be careful. Maybe I'll just eat, maybe I'll eat some grapes or something.
You know? Mm-hmm.
And I think it now, you know, the way you do this, if you really, 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 really want a milkshake, well, then you sort of save your calories up for it and you do it. Okay, fine.
Right.
But it's the same principle you do on cashier. If you really want to eat out more, eat at restaurants more, well, then you just budget more money into there, and it comes out of somewhere else. I mean, it's all,
you're just
aware of it.
And in my case, I used to, if there was something else I really wanted, I would work really hard not to spend all my grocery budget so I could go get that thing that I wanted.
Exactly. That's a great idea. Hey, there was a book some years ago, Kim, you may have never read it, by a guy named David Chilton called The Wealthy Barber. Did you ever read that book? Have you ever heard of it?
No, I haven't.
It's kind of an older book, but I heard him speak at a business conference one time, and I went out and bought his book. And the book's interesting because it's basically The Wealthy Barber. Now, his stuff is more on investing than budgeting, which is, so it comes at a little different angle to this personal financial deal. But, you know, the premise of the story is there's this barber in the small town and the people get their haircut, but the barber has done really well with his money and he basically dispenses financial advice while he's cutting people's hair as they ask questions. So that's basically the premise of the book. It's pretty interesting. But in his speech, he's kind of known for saves. He said, you know, he's making fun of himself and other people a little bit. He says, you know, there are people that can live on budgets, but they're no fun at parties. So, I mean, the idea being that, but you know, I know from reading the things that you write, you know, this doesn't all have to be this super tight, no fun, burdensome way of living. You don't live like that, do you?
No, I've got to be honest with you. You know, my husband and I used to fight often about money early on, and so we figured out that we needed to sit down and do a budget together. And when we did, at the same time, we decided, you know what, we're going to pay off our mortgage. We paid off our mortgage in 2 years. But I can tell you right now, like, I have complete peace about my financial situation.
Right.
I don't wake up in the morning worried about money. You know, like, it's such a huge difference when you know what's going on with your money and you're in control of that and you don't have debt weighing you down. Like, the freedom and the joy that you experience in life is so much different, you know?
That's a great point to make, I think. And you're exactly right. Because, you know, people, as I had mentioned before, that get into deep credit card debt, it absolutely, they can think of nothing else. You know, Kim, I used to fly small airplanes, and I've used this analogy in business type situations before. And when you're first learning how to fly a plane and you're flying quite a bit, what they tell you over and over and over and over and over again is watch your airspeed, watch your airspeed, watch your airspeed. That's the speed the air is going by the wings, which gives you lift. And if that drops below a certain critical point, depending on the design of the plane will simply stop flying. So the rule is watch your airspeed, watch your airspeed, watch your airspeed. Well, in business, I've told a lot of people, watch your cash, watch your cash, watch your cash. Because the minute it goes below the level needed to sustain your business, you're going to go out of business.
Right.
And I also make the analogy to people, you know, you can ignore cash when it's above a certain level. When it's above a certain critical level, you can not think about it too much. But if it goes below that critical level, whether that's in your personal life or in business, you will think of nothing else. And I think that's what you're talking about with this piece. Is if you get in financial trouble, it's hard to think of anything else.
Right.
It dominates you if you don't do it.
It really does.
Hey, we're going to probably finish this next question in the next segment, I think. But I read your blog on I was taking another question first. Groceries are something that I think people don't realize how much inflation's taken place in groceries in the last year. It's really. And, you know, Kim, some of it is, and I'm sure you know this, you know, where you used to buy a 5-pound bag of sugar, you pick up that bag now, it's not 5 pounds anymore. It's the same price.
So you
don't know, it's kind of sneaky inflation. You don't know the price went up. Now, you got a lot of tips about getting your grocery spending down while still eating.
Yeah.
Without giving up eating.
Well, one of the things I often suggest is, there's a store that's really growing quickly in a lot of areas, and it's Aldi's, and I'm sure most of the people listening have heard of it before.
My daughter loves Aldi's.
You know, they're like the most minimalist grocery store that you can shop at. You know, you have to put in a quarter to borrow a cart. You have to bring your own bags. Like, they've cut the overhead down quite a bit, and I feel like that's one of the main reasons they can pass, you know, the savings on, and, you know, you're not paying for the brands labeled on the bag. You know, so you're going in, you're just buying, you're buying quality food, you know, for your family, and they have mostly what you're going to find. You know, they're going to have their off-brand version of whatever it is that you're going to find. And I know, like, whole families of, like, 5 and 6, you know, who live on reasonable budgets just shopping at Aldi's because the prices are just low. And then they're not couponers, you know, people who just don't want to mess with coupons. They just want rock-bottom grocery prices. Like, that's a great place to start.
Right.
And then I often shop at Target because I figured out that I can stack. They have a Cartwheel app that goes on your phone, and it regularly has like 5% off your major food staples right off your bill if you just scan the app. And that's usually 5% off milk, 5% off cheese, 5% off bread, all those things. So you get that, but they also allow you to stack store coupons and manufacturer coupons there. And if you're using, like, for example, like, they have the Target Red debit card, which is just connected with your normal debit, you know, with your checking account, and it's not a credit card.
Right.
Every time you go through the line, that's an automatic 5% off your whole bill. So there's just ways, like with Target, there's a lot of stacking you can do to really bring your grocery bill down, you know, and pay a lot less. And then I also don't know how many people know this, but you don't have to BOGO. You don't have to buy one, get one free at a lot of stores, because the reality is those items are actually half price at the register. So if you were to just go up there, let's say, you know, you were buying your chips and they're $3.49 and they're buy one, get one free or whatever.
That is
the register.
That's
going to ring it up and it's going to come up half price.
Those are awesome tips, by the way. Find them on her website, thriftylittlemom.com. Back in just a moment. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business, talking with Kim Anderson, the Thrifty Little Mom. That's at thriftylittlemom.com. Right before the break, where I sort of had to hustle Kim out of when she was talking to us about some very interesting ways of saving money grocery shopping. Kim, go back. And you're right in the middle of talking to us about how to sort of play this buy one, get one free thing to your advantage. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Just when you're grocery shopping, you can look at the fine print on the tag of the item, and a lot of grocery stores will say the item is buy one, get one free, and so people feel like, oh, I get two for the price of one, but if you really look at it, you can just buy one and get it at half price. So I think that's really good for, you know, trying to cut your expenses in half.
You know, I have to tell you, as silly as that is, I didn't know that. I always just throw two of the bags, thinking, oh, I need to get the half price here. This is a good deal. I don't really need two bags of chips, but that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
that's what I'm doing. Hey, go ahead.
And then I also find, like, menu planning is a big deal. It's when you have a roadmap for why you're going to the grocery store and you have planned out before you go to the store what you're going to eat, you know, then you can be prepared and you can go into the store with your list and you can stick with your list and come out with what you have. And I think that probably is typically where a lot of people go over on groceries, is that they don't have a list, they're rushing in, they're grabbing what they need, and they're rushing out. But, you know, if they're hungry, then they're grabbing, you know.
I was going to say, I love grocery store when I'm hungry. You know, that's where I like to go.
Yes. Exactly.
That is exactly not the time to go, is it?
So even, like, on my blog, like, I created, like, a printable menu plan that you can print yourself. And, like, if you're a Pinterest lover, you can go on Pinterest, and any recipe you find, you can kind of plug that into your menu plan, and you can go and buy, you know, all the things you need and just stick with your list. And that can help reduce your grocery costs.
I read your blog on Budgeting 101. Just give us an overview of that right quick.
Sure. When I first started, like, you know, getting money, you know, as an adult, I always thought I was on a budget because I wasn't spending more money than what I was bringing in. Like, I could always pay for what I had. But a real budget, you know, if you're not sitting down when you get paid and figuring out where you're going to spend your money in every category of your life, you're not really budgeting. Otherwise, you're really just tracking what you're spending. you know, you're going back at the end of the month and you're saying, whew, I didn't overspend this month on this, you know, or I did, or whatever. And that's not the same as budgeting. And so budgeting 101 was just set up to help people understand what a budget is, you know, letting them know it's bossing your money around and telling it what to do. And every single penny that comes in your house gets a home in a category, whether it's groceries or savings or payments or utilities or retirement, all your money gets split every time you get paid so that you're always, you know, trying to figure out, can I cover what I've got? And that helps you see right up front, like, am I making enough money? Like, can we sustain what we're doing? Do we need to cut back here? Do we need to, you know, up the budget here and things like that? It's just a roadmap, just like, you know, when you're on a trip, you need to know where you're going. And that's what a budget does. It tells you where you're going.
You know, one of the things you talk about that a lot of people that give advice like you do don't always talk about is failing to address, I think, an issue that I have talked to people about before, which is, you know, you can address the cost-cutting side of your personal finances, mm-hmm. but there does come a time when perhaps some people need to look at the supply side of the equation and say, okay, we're not making enough money here, and how do we work on that? But you actually talk about that. I was glad to see you do that in some of your blogs.
Sure. You know, if you're in a situation where you realize, oh gosh, I'm not making really enough money to cover my expenses, and that's why I keep going into debt or whatever, that's when it's time, like you said, you got to figure out ways to bring in more income. And, you know, for some people, like, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and so maybe, you know, there are some women listening that are stay-at-home moms, and like, well, how do I contribute to increasing the income when I stay at home? You know, but you can do things such as, so simple, like selling, consigning stuff around your house. You know, some people go looking for ways to make a side income from delivering pizzas on the weekends, you know, selling just junk on eBay. Like my brother-in-law, he, you know, that's what he does, like, to bring in extra income. He goes to thrift stores, you know, he finds stuff and then he sells it online, and he, you know, he makes some extra money for his family that way. You know, you can upcycle stuff and then resell it. You know, and then I also am a big proponent of, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, create a business, but create one that has low overhead, like not one that you're going to need to go and get a loan for or anything like that, but just a business you can start, you know, if that's consulting or cleaning or whatever it is, you know, that you can just go ahead and start making a side income and increase your income that way.
I think we entrepreneurs do tend to think that way. You know, there is another side to it, I think, and you know, I think that people need to plan their careers a bit at time. And, you know, if you're in a career that's a dead end, I had some friends that were working for a company that was delivering yellow pages to homes. And mm-hmm. I told them, I said, you know, I don't see that being a career of the future right there. I mean,
right.
Not in today's world. So you need to, like, take whatever skills you developed in that and think where those skills apply somewhere else.
Right.
And they can do that. You know, in our company, we employ skilled laborers. Here in the United States, there's a big lack of skilled laborers. A lot of people don't mm-hmm. know that. And if you're a young person, a young person, and perhaps you have a college degree in history or something, and you just are not having a hard time finding a job with that, well, you know, you can, for very little money, go to community college and pick up some skills that people will absolutely hire you for, and you'll make good money.
Right. And I mean, that's an important point. You know, if you're wanting to increase your income and you don't see that happening in your future, you know, there's a way to, you know, pay your way cash through college through a program that gets you some skills that you can go get a job that you're actually going to like and be able to grow in.
Exactly. Hey, I like your blog about escaping a sales pitch. I have a background in sales, so it hurts my feelings a little bit. But I'm just kidding. But tell us about that.
Well, this came from a situation where when my husband and I were getting married, I went to your bridal show. Long story short, I got a call from something I entered when I was at the bridal show that said, hey, you want a free cruise. And I said, what's the catch? And they said, oh, there is no catch. And I said, what's the catch?
Right.
And they said, well, we need you to come to your presentation. And so I was like, okay. So me and my fiancé at that time, we went to the presentation, and we were sitting there, and we're watching, you know, and I made sure when I got there, I said, all I have to do is sit through this. I don't have to buy anything. And they're like, no, you don't. And I'm like, okay. So I sat through this presentation, and it was this, they were pots, like, you know, these fancy stackable, cookable crazy. I almost want to call them like Dr. Seuss pots or something. Yeah. Like, I don't know what you couldn't do with these things, right? And all of these young couples who are about to get married are sitting in this room, and they are like drooling over these things. And then they drop the $2,000 price tag. I'm sitting there like, what? I'm like, that's insane. Those are pots and pans, and you're just now getting married. And we watched as every couple got up and signed a payment plan to pay for pots and pans. And so the host was sort of kind of just making light of that situation that I found myself in, but it was like being in the twilight zone. I'm like, are you serious? Like, you probably have no money, and right now you're going to go ahead and get into a payment debt plan for pots and pans. You know, like, are they really that amazing? And that kind of stuff, you know. So this post is really just giving you a synopsis and saying, you know, when you're going into a situation where you know that it's a sales situation. I mean, everybody buys stuff. We buy cars, we buy houses, we buy whatever. You know, and I have no problem with salespeople, just to put that out there. Like, everybody's got to make their money. Like, there's a big difference between salespeople and con artists. there's a big difference. And so when you're going into a sales situation, I always say, read the fine print. Just make sure that there's no catches. Make sure that it is free. If somebody tells you something's free, make sure it's free.
Right.
And don't fear confrontation. Like, don't be afraid to be the boss of your own money. Like, they're wanting your money. It's your money, and it's not their money yet. So don't be afraid to say, no, I'm not interested, you know.
Right.
And don't be afraid to walk away. I always say, remember that you're in control of the situation. Like, you know, you are always in control until the minute that you sign something over to somebody else. And as a woman, one of my easiest things to do is say, I better ask my husband. You know, which I know most salespeople are ready for, you know, but about 3 or 4 years ago, this happened to me in a gym membership situation. And the manager looked at me when I told him this, and he said, if you don't sign this right now, I'm not going to give you this price. And to me, that was not, it was
in which
not
case
nice.
You say, okay, fine.
Right. And I was like, who made that rule? You know what I mean? Like, you're telling me that you're going to give me one price right now, but if I go home, that price is going to change on a membership. Like, that doesn't line up. You know, and so there's just various things that sometimes people will do or say because they want to make a sale, you know, but you're always in control. And then anytime somebody asks me for my phone number, I always turn it around and say, I'll call you, because then I'm in control of the situation. So that's how I kind of encourage people to keep the money in their pocket and not be pressured into spending money that they don't really have.
Kim, I'm embarrassed to tell you that when my wife and I first got married, we were a young couple. I was in the Coast Guard. We had no money. I mean, I'm telling you, no money. And we were at a party where they were selling pots and pans. And we bought some. I don't know how long it took to pay the money. It wasn't $2,000. It wasn't near that
right.
much money. But now I will say we still have those pots and pans.
Yes.
They were not bad pots and pans, but it was the same thing. We probably paid twice for them, which you would have paid. But again,
right.
Now we kind of learned over the years, and I do like what you do. Anytime anybody gives me a, you know, you have to give it this price right now or it's no good, that to me is an immediate cue to say, okay, see ya. That's,
right.
That's a complete bluff. There's no way in the world that's true. They're not going to hold you.
Right.
Hold you to that. Hey, right quick, in about a minute here, you have a nice little niche there, is the Thrifty Mom Market blog. What do you envision as a future for this blog?
Well, for me, my goal is to just keep building the website and building traffic and building an audience. And my goal for 2015 is to start my own podcast, hopefully, so that I can talk about, you know, thrifty topics and things like that that I think people would be interested in learning more about. And, you know, I mean, with blogs, you got to keep creating great content for people to keep coming back.
Yes,
so
yes,
I got to keep doing that. I want to publish some more ebooks, self-publish some more ebooks on Amazon, because that's just, I'm a writer, and it's so easy to self-publish on Amazon. And I'm really looking to get more and more public speaking opportunities, because that's kind of where my heart and where my sort of passion and stuff is as well.
So. I think you'll do very good podcast and things of that sort myself. I think you've got a great little niche right there that a lot of people will listen to. Kim, stay with us one more segment here. I want to talk to you a little bit about.
Great.
I want to talk to you right after the break. I want to get you to tell us about your planning a thrifty Disney vacation.
Yeah.
And we'll be hearing that. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. As always, we have interesting guests, and most of our guests are interesting. And today's guest, to me, is particularly interesting. It's Kim Anderson, the Thrifty Little Mom. You find her at thriftylittlemom.blog. If you forget that, it'll be on eddiemayfield.com. We'll have a link to her. Remember, today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. If you have some friends you'd like to hear this, or you can find it on iTunes. Kim, just for fun, tell us about planning a Thrifty Mom Disney vacation.
Sure. I really wanted to go to Disney World a few years back, and my husband is super frugal. So he loves, you know, traveling and stuff. So it's not a problem. But when we were on the trip, we were trying to figure out, you know, how do we do this vacation and not, you know, spend tons and tons of money and still be able to really enjoy ourselves. And so we found some ways to save a lot of money. For one of our family members had a timeshare, and we found out for, you know, $250 out of pocket, we could stay at their timeshare for the whole week. So we were in Disney at a resort for $250 for a week. So that's a really great price.
Yes, it is.
And we went in the off season, which is typically like the winter months, you know, when kids are in school and things like that. And so, you know, as opposed to going in the summer where you're lucky if you get to ride two or three of the major rides, we rode every ride in the park by 1 p.m. in the afternoon. And some of the ways we saved money, we packed our own lunch. We did peanut butter and jelly and took it into the park with us. And we did Gatorades and took our own empty water bottles so we could fill them up. And we poured those Gatorade packets that you could shake up and make juice out of into our water bottles and things. And, you know, there's also free things to do in Orlando. You can look those up. There's parks and things. So if you want to just take your, you know, your kids to Disney one day and just pay the one day price, you can do that. We didn't up our tickets to park hoppers. We just stuck with the basic tickets and just enjoyed each park each day. Just small things like that, just to save money here and there.
And going back to your blog, just for a moment, to talk about sort of the business side of that, and you actually mentioned it a while ago, but you know, we have a saying in broadcasting and in business in general that content kind of trumps BS in a way. I mean, you know, you can spread a lot of bull around, but eventually it comes back home to roost. And people, and you know, you can advertise that you've got this great blog or this great show or this great that or the other. But when people get there and there's no content there, that's the last time you're going to hear from them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, from reading your blog, you do have really good content. I just wondered, do you ever worry about continuing to do relevant good content? I mean, because you keep having to dig that out of yourself.
Well, I would say, you know, for one, I have an editorial calendar that's planned out for 2 or 3 months in advance, so I'm usually pretty ahead as far as ideas go. But beyond that, when I sit down, I learned an important lesson from writer Jeff Goins, and he talks about serving your audience. And so when I sit down to write, the question I ask myself is, how is this serving my audience, and how is what I'm publishing providing value to their lives? If it's not, it's not worth writing.
That's a great question. In fact, it's a great question for any business to ask, I think, is how are we serving our market and however you want to do that. You know, you as well, you're an entrepreneur and you're a mom. I think I'd tell you, I have a great friend out in Texas that passed away some years ago, and he always told me that life was kind of in three parts, your professional or work life, your family life, and your spiritual life. And he, you know, he used to always kind of warn me about, don't let those things get out of balance. You'll keep, don't. And I think the problem for some of us is we concentrate on business to the exclusion of everything else. And there are a lot of particular men, I think, that have later in life regretted that decision. How about you? How do you balance your life?
Well, I went to a conference last year, and one of the sessions I was in, this gentleman said something that really stood out to me. And he said, you know, it's not about work-life balance. It's about work-life integration.
Right.
And so I've taken that idea, and I've really tried to apply that in my life, you know. And I've seen people who do what I do successfully. Like, I try to follow successful bloggers and see what they do and what things, you know, make them successful. And some of that is, you know, that they get up in the fringe hours to do what they do. To do what they love. They get up, you know, at 5:30, 4:30 in the morning to write before the kids get up, before the family gets up, before they have to clean the house or whatever they do, that they just take time and they make that a priority, you know. And for me, like, even though I may write or do social media during the day, like when my son is playing or whatever, if my son comes over and says, I need a hug, like I'm going to stop what I'm doing and I'm going to take that minute, you know, because I don't ever want to regret not taking that minute, because it's not going to be forever that he wants to crawl up on my lap and give me a hug.
Trust me, I'm a granddad now. Those years where your kids go by, and I don't know anybody that doesn't say this at some point. It just astonishes you how fast those years just fly by. They seem to be kind of, sometimes you're like you're treading water when you're in the middle of them. But boy, I'll tell you that they go by very quickly. You know, Kim, does it ever? You know, you're an internet blogger. Does it ever hit you like it does me? We do a lot of business via the internet at our company, and it sometimes just takes me back at how the technology has really impacted and changed our lives. Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, if I get online, I use Google Analytics, and that's what helps me track, like, and helps me keep up with, like, who's on my blog, you know, what they're doing, things like that, so I can know my audience better. And when I look at that and I see that global picture, you know, and there's people who are like over on the other side of the world that are reading a post, like that blows my mind, you know. And not only are they reading it, but like I can sit on my computer and I can say real time and it'll show me, you know, the number of people that are on my site at that moment, you know, like that moment. Like just technology is so instant and so easy. And everybody now, especially like I would say 60% of my audience is mobile driven. You know, like they're on their phones looking at my site. They're not sitting on a desktop.
Right.
You know, and that's just when you've got the internet in your hands everywhere you go, the world is at your fingertips.
It is pretty amazing. Hey, in about a minute here, can you have any for, let's say, somebody that sees what you're doing and let's say not competing with you directly, but just has some other great idea for a blog they want to do? You got any advice for them?
Yeah, if you're really interested in starting a blog, number one, I would say, get a free blogging account from, you know, Blogger or, you know, WordPress.com or one of those, and you set that up first. And just make sure that you're going to stick with it. Like, set up a new, this is what I did. I said, I got to write 50 posts before I do anything with this blog. Wow. Like, before I start paying for a domain, before I do any of that, I've got to write 50 posts, because then you know you're committed. And once, you know, and if you want to know how to get things started, a really inexpensive investment, for me was, I bought Ruth Sukup's book, How to Blog for Profit Without Selling Your Soul. And that is a book available. I got it on Amazon and I read it on my Kindle in like a day. But I mean, she pretty much covers like everything a beginner would need to know in that book. And that's
Say her name again.
Yeah, it's Ruth Sukup. It's S-O-U-K-U-P, I believe, is the last name. And it's How to Start a Blog. How to Blog for Profit Without Selling Yourself.
Sounds like something to be worth reading. You know, Kim, you've been a great guest. I appreciate you having here. I have to tell you, I'm a little intimidated by how organized you are. It was like, I'm afraid if you saw my office or something, you'd think, oh, this guy's a bum.
Well, I mean, I would not say that I am like a natural organizer. Like, I write as I solve my own problems. And so when you get on my blog and you say, whoa, she's super organized, the truth is, like, I'm writing as I'm teaching myself to be a more organized person. And so I write about what struggles I personally have. And so when you see, you know, the things about clutter, like, that's because I'm dealing with clutter right now, you know, or whatever. And I've found these different systems. And I'm always, I think that's part of my personality, is that I have this extreme need to problem solve. And so when I'm at home and I come into a problem where I'm like, I've got piles of paper, you know, then I come up with a paper pile annihilation system and I write about it. And that's pretty much how my organization, you know, comes about, is that every person's different and everybody has a different, you know, way of organizing. But, you know, I would also say that a good bit of organizing has to do with how much clutter and things you own. And the more of that you eliminate, the easier it is to organize.
Which could be a point for a whole nother show. Kim, you've been a great guest. Thank you so much for coming on Driven
Thank you
Business.
Thank you so much for having me.
Business
this
Today.
So much fun.
It's been a very informative time for me. You know, I think Zig Ziglar said, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. So if somebody wants to do a blog, get out there and start it is the first thing to do. Listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll see you again next Saturday morning. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.